UPS mechanics have a new contract deal. Germany finds a way to bail out Airbus on the A400M. And Kennedy Space Center observes a somber anniversary. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Thursday, January 27th, 2011. The International Brotherhood of Teamsters has reached a tentative agreement on what it touts as an industry-leading labor contract between UPS and its aircraft mechanics. The agreement comes after 4 years of negotiations involving Teamsters Local 2727, the Teamsters Airline Division, UPS, and the National Mediation Board. Captain David Bourne, director of the Teamsters Airline Division, calls it an excellent offer and a win for airline labor. Quote, "We are proud to present such a strong package to our brothers and sisters, particularly in such an uncertain economy," unquote. The tentative agreement features an industry-best top rate, continued free health care benefits, retroactive pay, and other lump sum payments for past years, and work rule improvements, including a new aviation safety awareness program, and company concessions that will bring vendor work in-house. The proposed contract would run through November 1st of 2013, when it would again become amendable and will go into effect immediately upon ratification. A vote among the 1,200 union mechanics is being arranged. The German government has found a way to bail out the Airbus A400M military transport project, probably without running afoul of the World Trade Organization. Germany says it will, quite simply, buy 53 of the planes, more than it needs, and figure out how to sell 13 of them to outside parties. The agreement reportedly removes the final hurdle to completing the long-overdue and over-budget transport aircraft. A consortium of European governments has been working to rescue the project, agreeing to a price increase that will push the overall cost of the aircraft to almost $2.7 billion. The U.S. Navy has announced the award of a $1.6 billion contract to Boeing for P-8A Poseidon aircraft low-rate initial production of 6 planes. The contract also includes spares, logistics, and training devices. Production will begin this summer at Boeing's facility in Renton, Washington. 3 of the 6 flight test aircraft, built as part of the System Development and Demonstration contract awarded to Boeing in 2004, are in various stages of testing at Naval Air Station Patuxent River, Maryland. The integrated test team has conducted sonobuoy releases and countermeasures deployments. One of 2 static test planes has completed full-scale airframe testing, undergoing 154 different tests with no failure of the primary structure. The second aircraft will begin fatigue testing this year. The Navy plans to purchase 117 production P-8As to replace its P-3 fleet. Entry into service is planned for 2013 at NAS Jacksonville in Florida. Kennedy Space Center is observing NASA's Day of Remembrance today and the 25th anniversary of the Space Shuttle Challenger accident tomorrow. NASA officials will lay a wreath at the Space Mirror Memorial at the KSC Visitor Complex. Up next on ANN, ironically, jumping out of airplanes is getting safer. EBAA tries for harmony in Europe. And 3 U.S. banks are betting on an economic recovery. You're listening to Aero News.
Freedom through control. Cirrus has completely reinvented the personal aircraft and the entire experience of owning a personal aircraft. It's a bold new take on private aviation that we call Cirrus Flying 2.0. You set the schedule. You chart the course. You're in control.
Diamond Aircraft's D-Jet is the ultimate private aircraft for the owner-flown market, offering simplicity of operation, safety, and affordability. Imagine starting the turbine with a simple push of a button. Push the single lever throttle forward. Monitor your flight on the cutting-edge G1000 with integrated autopilot and enjoy the reliability, performance, smoothness, and quiet of turbine power. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3222.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for January 27th. I'm Paul Plack. With general aviation's safety record flat or down slightly, it's nice to be able to report that, ironically, jumping out of airplanes is getting safer. So says the U.S. Parachute Association. In the 1970s, the sport averaged 42.5 fatalities per year. Since then, the average has dropped every decade. In the 1980s, the average was 34.1. In the 1990s, 32.3. And in 2000 through 2009, the average dropped again to 25.8. In 2010, USPA recorded 21 fatal skydiving accidents in the U.S. That's just under half the 1970s average. Association Executive Director Ed Scott quips, quote, "As a matter of fact, the most dangerous part of skydiving is driving to the drop zone," unquote. USPA's annual Safety Day will be held March 12th at USPA-affiliated drop zones and skydiving schools throughout the country. Since the first one in 1997, the annual event has prepared jumpers for the year ahead through a series of seminars and drills that serve both as a refresher course and an introduction to new developments, equipment, disciplines, and training methods. Find out more about the association at uspa.org. EBAA, the European Business Aviation Association, says it concluded a highly successful One Europe regional forum last Friday, agreeing to concrete actions to address the many operational challenges raised by members of the business aviation community. Of chief concern was the unlevel playing field that exists within Europe. The forum was subtitled, "A Roadmap for Aligning East and West." EBAA Chairman Rodolfo Baviera notes, quote, "As the discussions progressed, it became clear that there was also still much to do to align West with West," unquote. EBAA says issues include the lack of harmonized rules, most notably in respect to runway performance requirements and flight time limitations for commercial and non-commercial operations. This contributes to operators choosing to label their activities as private when they are in fact commercial. And from country to country, the definition of commercial and non-commercial can carry multiple interpretations. Access, particularly to Russia, Kazakhstan, and Belarus, and a lack of harmony in tax schemes are also roadblocks. The aircraft leasing group Avolon says it has raised an additional $465 million in capital, bringing the total raised since May of 2010 to over $2.5 billion. The capital raising is the third announced by Avolon in 8 months and comes in the form of a long-term debt facility from a consortium of three leading U.S. banks. The transaction was led and structured by Wells Fargo Securities, and the consortium includes Citi and Morgan Stanley. It's intended that proceeds will be used to fund Avolon's growing aircraft fleet. Avolon Chief Financial Officer Andy Cronin commented, quote, "These significant commitments are an endorsement of the Avolon business model, the industry-leading team we have assembled, and the strength of the portfolio we are building. International capital is accessible to prudent, well-managed businesses with credible, long-term prospects," unquote. Resource Group, a software developer, has joined with Wheeltug PLC in the development of the Wheeltug Integrated Aircraft Electric Drive System. Resource Engineering Projects, the engineering division of Resource Group, will develop, test, verify, and certify the software for the Wheeltug system for the Boeing 737NG. As part of the risk-sharing agreement, REP is becoming a significant shareholder in Wheeltug. The patented Wheeltug electric drive system uses high-performance electric motors installed in the nose landing gear wheels of an aircraft to provide full mobility while on the ground without the use of the aircraft's jet engines or tugs for both pushback and taxi operations. Wheeltug enables aircraft to be electrically driven from the terminal gate to takeoff runway and back the other way after landing. The developers say that means improvements in efficiency, flexibility, fuel savings, and reduce noise and engine foreign object damage, and project savings of more than $500,000 per aircraft per year, plus substantial reductions in CO2 and other greenhouse gas emissions. Once ready for the 737, systems for other commercial and military aircraft are promised. Still ahead, there may be historic space for rent at Kennedy Space Center. Get out with your camera tonight and make some money. And Larry Newman has gone west. You're listening to Aero News.
Piperjet.
Piper Match.
Global expansion.
Meridian, Mirage, Matrix, and more.
With so much happening at Piper, how can I possibly keep up?
Get informed. Get involved at facebook.com/Piper Aircraft.
you're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Thursday, January 27th. I'm Paul Plack. Larry Newman, the last surviving member of the crew of the Double Eagle II balloon, has died. Newman reportedly succumbed to a three-year battle with pancreatic cancer. In 1978, Newman joined with Ben Abruzzo and Maxie Anderson to fly the Double Eagle II balloon and become the first to fly a balloon across the Atlantic Ocean. Newman also teamed with Abruzzo, Ron Clark, and Rocky Aoki on the crew of the Double Eagle V, the first balloon to cross the Pacific. Newman was the last surviving member of the Double Eagle II crew. Newman had been involved in aviation almost since infancy. He was a world champion hang glider and a 757 captain with America West Airlines for 10 years, among his other accomplishments. A celebration of life will be held this Saturday at Falcon Field Airport in Mesa, Arizona, from 4 till 9 p.m. NASA has released a formal notice of availability and request for information to identify interest from industry for space processing and support facilities at Kennedy Space Center. The facilities may become available for space-related commercial use when the space shuttle program ends. KSC Director Bob Cabana explained, quote, "Partnering with the commercial space industry will help NASA meet its goals and help sustain facility assets to support our nation's space objectives," unquote. If you might be a candidate, find out more in an FMI link at the bottom of the text version of this story, dated January 26th at aero-news.net. And finally today, NASA has formed a partnership with spaceweather.com to engage the amateur astronomy community to submit the best images of the orbiting NanoSail D solar sail. NanoSail D unfurled the first ever 100-square-foot sail in low Earth orbit on January 20th. The contest is open to all types of images, including but not limited to telescopic captures of the sail, to simple wide-field camera shots of solar sail flares. If NanoSail D is in the field of view, the image is eligible for judging. The solar sail is about the size of a large tent. It'll be observable for 70 to 120 days before it re-enters the atmosphere and disintegrates. NASA predicts experienced astrophotographers will want to take the first-ever telescopic pictures of a solar sail unfurled in space. Spaceweather.com is offering a $500 grand prize, $300 first prize, and $100 second prize. Not exactly X prize money, but certainly worth spending a couple nights out on the lawn with a tripod. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, ANN's Jim Campbell talks with Julie Fallucci, manager of Cessna Pilot Centers for Cessna Aircraft, about the training program developed for the Skycatcher. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts at iPodder, Podcast Alley, or at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.